You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It has been a year now since Michigan and the world learned that the blood lead levels of children living in areas in Flint had doubled, even tripled. It was September 2015 when pediatrician Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha braved the scorn of certain state employees to present her stunning research findings that proved kids in Flint had been poisoned because of the switch to Flint River water. As we know by now, those dismissive state officials were wrong, and Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha was right. This one-year milestone seemed like a good time to talk again with Dr. Mona, who is the director of the pediatrics program at Hurley Medical Center. Welcome.
It's great to be back, Cynthia.
Let's look at this last year, and really we're looking at the 2.5 years since that fateful switch was made from Detroit water to the Flint River. But thinking of your expectations from a year ago for what the response would be, have the state, federal, and local governments lived up to the expectations that you had a year ago?
Yeah, well, you know, it's very mixed, Cynthia. We are now actually in our third year in Flint of water that we can still not drink. So despite sounding the alarm a year ago, despite our residents being on this contaminated water since April of 2014, we still do not have safe water in Flint. So a lot has happened in terms of improving the water quality, notifying residents of the danger of the water, getting filters and bottled water out there, but we are yet unable to drink water from our tap. And that is still really mind-boggling to be in a city in the middle of the Great Lakes, in the middle of the largest source of fresh water in the world, and yet to have safe water.
What are you hearing from people, Dr. Mona? I'm wondering what, as you see patients and their families, what are their main frustrations and their main fears?
Yeah, I think the main frustration that I hear from families every single day is, what's going to happen to my kid? You know, here we were for 18 months drinking water that we now know is contaminated, undisclosed, and we know that this has potential to impact their development and really their entire life course trajectory. They want to know what's going to happen to their kids.
And what do you say to them? What are you answering?
You know, I do very much of what a pediatrician does best, and I try to provide a lot of reassurance and a lot of hope. I actually feel like I'm writing prescriptions for hope these days. I am trying to empower our families and our beautiful children that they have a future full of hope. And I tell them that, hey, you know, we can't take this away, and we don't know what's going to happen to your kids, but we are so hopeful that their future is going to be even brighter than their past because of the interventions that we are bringing in. So I tell them about all the resources coming in, such as we now have universal preschool for our four-year-olds. We have a new child care center that just opened. We have Medicaid expansion. We have a mobile grocery store. So we have all of these great things that have come into Flint that our families and their children can access to mitigate the impact of this exposure and to really promote their development.
Has people's trust in officials and their pronouncement about anything, has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? What do you feel?
No, I don't think that trust has gotten any better. The 18 months of betrayal, of, you know, really being dismissed, has shattered the people of Flint's trust in government. There has been so many efforts to rebuild that trust, like I said, from all of these different interventions that are coming to you from government, from philanthropy, from academia, et cetera. But it is going to take a long time for that trust to be rebuilt. You can almost think of it like the people of Flint are going through a truth and reconciliation process. They need to know, they need to have that accountability. They want to know what happened and who did what when, and they want the criminal charges and the investigations. And there's almost a level of the need for reparations. And then they can start that really long process of healing and recovery. Often when I tell families and community members, like, oh, look at all these great things coming in, look at all these things, it's not enough. And it will never be enough. And that is entirely understandable because of what they have gone through.
I'm speaking with Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha, marking the one-year anniversary of her news conference where she stepped out and that study of lead levels that she did in the blood of Flint children became known to the world. And that study helped to force the state and the Snyder administration to admit the decision to switch the Flint to the Flint River for drinking water caused that all-out public health disaster. We've got this federal lawsuit brought by Flint pastors and activists, Dr. Mona, demanding, you know, free home delivery of bottled water and faucets and free replacement of the lead water pipes for people in Flint. What are you seeing and hearing as far as donations of money and bottled water? Are those drying up?
Absolutely. You know, we are out of the spotlight. So people think that Flint is fixed. So, you know, there's not as much media attention and you just don't hear about it anymore. So those donations and those efforts and the water drives have decreased. So there's, you know, it's hard when I explain to people that, hey, we still don't have safe water to drink. And all these great things are happening, but they're funded on maybe 1 or 2 year budget cycles. And we have yet to garner that long-term commitment to maintain these programs for decades to come. So there is still a significant need for water delivery, for filter replacement. We have so many hard-to-reach pockets in Flint that need the basic delivery of these services.
I'm wondering, how would you grade the state as far as delivering bottled water and filters and cartridges and the testing kits? Is the state doing enough? Is it falling short?
I think they're trying, and you know, they've been on the ground. We had really robust home delivery efforts with the National Guard, and now with a lot of Flint folks were hired to do some of that home delivery. We now have hub sites in all of the 9 wards. So there have been some remarkable efforts, but there's always going to be gaps, and there are gaps. So, you know, we need to, because this crisis is not over, and because the treatment is complicated, the filters are not easy to use. They're not easy to install. They're not easy to maintain. So we need kind of constant maintenance to keep all these things up.
Certainly there have been bumps along the road to recovery. We know at this point only some 36 of the more than 11,000 lead service pipes have been replaced. And now we're hearing, well, it might be people's faucets at home contributing to the problem. That must be frustrating. Last winter, General Michael McDaniel was put in charge of getting the lead pipes out, and now we've learned he has yet to be paid. We've got the State Department of Health and Human Services frozen out of any involvement in the public health response to outbreaks of Legionnaires. That's just a sampling. I'm wondering, there you are on the ground, what are you thinking as all of this is playing out through these months?
It's quite a drama and an ordeal. We had a city that had such limited capacity. You know, I think when the mayor moved in, there was not even furniture. So she is actively trying to build the capacity in so many departments to do this work and to work collaboratively with all of these different agencies. You know, despite all of this drama and all of these setbacks, there, like I said, there's so many amazing things happening in Flint. There's this amazing website called Flint Cares where you could see what the community has put together in terms of interventions and programs. And even though we hear about these conflicts, sometimes in times of tragedy like what we have in Flint, the community comes together than unlike they have ever come before. And that's what I see in Flint. I see people working together who never worked together before, agencies and academia and institutions, to really work for a brighter Flint. So that is what I see. I see a lot of hope. I see a lot of optimism. And despite these setbacks, I think, at least for our children, they're going to be fantastic.
Does it make you uneasy as a physician, understanding that the state health department is basically shut out of involvement in Flint?
Yeah. So this is, I think, unprecedented. I don't see how it is consistent with our public health code. The health department needs to be aware of what's going on. I understand the need not to be involved in historic information and historic investigations, but some of these things are impacting our daily patient care. We need to know that we currently have a Shigella outbreak. And finally, we did actually just get a release from the health department. We need to know about the Legionnaires cases. So unless we see the federal government, the CDC, really stepping in and providing that information in place of the state health department, it may potentially jeopardize current care.
So that is certainly something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely unprecedented. You know, the state health department is involved now, and they're helping with the case management, and they're doing what they need to do, and they're really supporting our county health department, which is also very under capacity. If they're not going to be able to do their role, then we need the transparency to know that, for example, the CDC is doing that job.
And to the point about General McDaniel, yet to be paid, even though the Mott Foundation did put money up to pay his salary, are you confident from what you're seeing, Dr. Mona, that donated money from wherever is getting to where it needs to go?
In all of the organizations that I work with, I definitely see philanthropy's money being spent transparently and for great programming. The Mott Foundation is putting in significant investment in early education, and we have a new early education center that mm-hmm. is opening up. The Carnegie Foundation is putting money for early literacy, and we have pop-up preschools, you know, out there. So I definitely see the impact and the money spent from these philanthropic dollars, but I cannot speak specifically to General McDaniel's situation.
Earlier this year, Governor Snyder said he was going to push for the toughest lead test rules in the entire country, and so far nothing seems to have happened with that. How important is that in your view?
You know, that's incredibly important because we can't just fix Flynn. We have to use our lessons learned to make a difference, not just in Michigan, but throughout the country. So there's been so many lessons that we have learned. We have learned that lead in water is a problem not just in Flint, but it's a problem all over the nation, and it's specifically a problem in our schools all over the nation. We've learned that lead can impact our most vulnerable children, and it's not a problem of yesterday. It's a problem of today and tomorrow. So the state did come up with a model lead and copper rule, and I think right now they are drafting legislation to get that implemented. The lieutenant governor also established a childhood lead poisoning elimination board for the state, which I now sit on, looking at all of children's lead exposure in the state, and then how can we proactively eliminate all children's exposure from lead because of its known, obviously, neurotoxic impacts. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful, and these are all great strides, and we're hoping to really be a model. Like, yeah, Flint went through this disaster, but look what we learned, and look how we can apply those lessons learned to the entire state and to other communities suffering from similar issues.
I'd like to talk a little, Dr. Mona, about the health of the Flint children that you're seeing now. Have you seen changes in the blood lead levels of Flint's children compared to what you reported to all of us a year ago?
Yeah, so the percentage of children with elevated blood lead levels has come down, and that's fantastic, but, you know, it doesn't tell us much about what happened in the past. Lead has a very short detection window in your blood. It has something called a half-life of 28 days, and then half of it dissipates from your blood. So every kid that was tested after we knew that we were in this public health emergency, you know, then they could take precautions. They had access to alternatives. Their levels came down. So we missed children's peak lead levels. That is why we are really under the assumption that every child was potentially exposed. Doesn't mean they're all going to have problems, but they were all potentially exposed, and thus they all need to benefit from the secondary prevention. So what we are seeing in our kids right now is difficult to say. All of the research done on lead poisoning, is done in the field of epidemiology, which is kind of population health. We can never really prove causation. You know, if I see a kid in my clinic tomorrow and I diagnose him with a learning disability, I can never say it was the lead. You can't prove that. Right now, everybody thinks everything is related to the water, but maybe that kid was always supposed to have a learning disability. You know, there's also these multifactorial reasons. But we end up treating the child the same. We give them the same resources, and we try to mitigate that. But the work that we're doing, the work that I'm doing every day, is trying to build the support systems so that we never see those complications. We've launched this pediatric public health initiative, which I now direct through Michigan State University and Hurley Children's Hospital. And it is our effort to throw every single intervention at these kids so we don't see the consequences. And when I come back and talk to you, not in 1 year, but in 5 years and 10 years and 15 years, I'm not going to tell you the consequences of lead exposure in our community, but I'm going to tell you and I'm going to share with you how we were able to mitigate those consequences through early education and great nutrition and great schools and healthcare. So with this great wraparound public health approach that we are trying to implement.
And I know, just speaking from the terms of epidemiology and public health studies, is it too soon for you to say that that you and other physicians are seeing more children with learning disabilities with intellectual deficits?
It's definitely too soon, and we are planning that research. So we are currently identifying the children, building a registry, planning for that annual neurodevelopmental assessments to do all that tracking. Every federal bill that has gone through Congress has had money for this registry, but as you know, nothing has passed. in Congress for Flint. So we are still trying to garner the resources to do that long-term epidemiologic follow-up. But once again, we hope not to share the consequences of lead, but how we were able to be a model for the nation and flip the story around.
In another related health question, a Hurley research team has been looking into whether the water crisis sparked an increase in miscarriages in Flint.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about that study?
I'm part of that team, and we are still gathering the data. The data is very complicated because miscarriage data sometimes is never reported. People don't even know they have a miscarriage. It's also reported in many different clinical settings. So that is something that we are still in process of looking at. But lead is known to be to have maternal fetal complications. Just a little bit of history. In the 1890s in Sheffield, England, which is actually where I was born, they had this huge lead and water disaster. And they noticed many of the women that were pregnant lost their babies. So in the early 1900s, the geniuses over there created the first one of the first abortion pills in northern England, which was a lead-based abortion pill. And there's articles from, like, the British Medical Journal how these women were using these lead pills to cause abortions. And there's lots of research from D.C. that also shows it's maternal fetal complications. So that is something that we are studying as part of our team.
You have said the challenges for Flint's children will be with them for a lifetime. What do you feel it will take to keep the children and the people of Flint from being pushed to the back burner as the months and years wear on? Because as you say, we're going to be talking 5 years, 10 years from now down the road. What is it going to take to keep Flint top of mind?
Yeah, so I think it's every conversation we have, it's sharing our story, but it's also getting that long-term support. This is not like any other disaster that our nation has gone through. It's not a flood or a hurricane that you clean up from. You will have consequences, but this is something, like you said, that we will be dealing with potentially for decades and generations to come. So we need to keep talking about it. We need to keep garnering the support. We need Congress and the state government and philanthropy to continue stepping up so that we can do these amazing things that we're starting to do, but for many, many more years to come.
Dr. Mona Hannah-Attisha, thank you so much for speaking with us on Stateside.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia.